the touch.
Stan Bush here, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Craig.
And this is Dan. And we are talking circles about the GeekCast Radio Network, the podcast that is going to get you, sucker. Today, we will be discussing Netflix's most recent Marvel TV show, Luke Cage. Yes, we finally marathoned it, got through it. Last week, we gave her some initial thoughts. We're going to dive deep into spoilers and all that great stuff in our second segment. But before we get to that, how's the week been going for you guys? It's been an eventful one, I know that much.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. A week for me was very good. I went on a couple adventures. Obviously, we hinted last week, Craig and I were going to New York Comic Con, so we'll be able to talk a little bit about that later on. And also, the next day when I got home, I went up to, there's this ski resort by us, this really tall mountain, and it's one of the highest in Pennsylvania. And they actually had this like fall festival thing, so you could like see the leaves changing, and they were operating the chairlift so you could go to the top of the mountain. And I got to go up there and check that out, and that was really, really cool because I'd never been up there before. And you could see for like just miles and miles. It's unbelievable. It seems like you'd see for like 20 miles, and it almost looked fake. Like your eyes couldn't like grasp what you're seeing, kind of. It was a really, really crazy experience because, like, you know, you had like there's like some cloud cover, and then you know, you're just looking way off into the horizon, and it just looked like this painting or something. It just, I don't know, it didn't look real, but that was a really cool experience and everything. So,
could you get
had a pretty
good time to do it too? So,
yeah. It was, you know, the leaves were good and everything, but it was like cold up there. It was like freezing cold, probably 20 degrees colder than it was at the base of the mountain. So, but yeah, cool weekend.
Nice, nice. Greg, how are things going with you?
It's been a bit of an up and down week for me. Had an awesome time with Chuck and everybody that we went with to the New York City Comic Con and everything. So that was really good. But then we kind of lost kind of the unsung mascot of the show, especially when we had live episodes. Yeah. If anybody's ever listened to them, my dog Raisin, you could hear occasionally in the background. And unfortunately, she has passed away. So yeah. Rest in peace, Raisin. Love you a whole bunch. So
yeah, losing dogs sucks. That's never, it's never a fun thing to do. My week has also been kind of eventful. I didn't get the chance to go to New York Comic Con, but I did have an unfortunate run-in with an animal, literally, as I hit a deer driving this week.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Please not in your car, because I feel like you could have got really messed up if it was in your car.
Oh, it was my car, yeah.
Oh, because your deer is like 10 times the size of your car.
It is. Luckily, it wasn't like a fawn, but it wasn't full-size, and it hit my, like, it was weird. So I was driving. I dropped my son off at daycare, and it's like kind of driving in the kind of back roads a little bit. And you know, like I'm just going around this corner. It's a 2-lane road, and freaking like I don't even see it honestly because they're kind of a sharp turns, and it hits my like left fender area, and like bounces right off. And it didn't have a really like big impact. It almost sounded like it hit a bird in a way, but it was much bigger than that, obviously. So I. Luckily, I was, you know, my son, I was in the car by myself, So parked, and then a very nice woman who like saw it happen helped me bring the deer to the side of the road. But I felt really bad because like there was this big field that I could see, and there was all these other deer kind of looking at me, and I'm like, I clearly killed their family member. I am now a villain in a Disney movie, so that's awesome.
So sometimes they I don't know how dead it was, but sometimes they actually like pop back up and kind of keep running after after a while.
But no, it's still dead because I drove by the same place this morning and it was still there. So unless it's really playing dead for like it's really good at it and dedicated, but no, it was dead. So I was like, oh. But it was a smaller deer, but it did, you know, like Greg alluded to, my car is very small, so it did some damage. It's still drivable. To go get it fixed tomorrow. It's just more of a very expensive inconvenience, but you know, stupid deer. What are you gonna do? I kind of felt bad because I killed it, and like I didn't expect to kill a deer today, but you know, it happened. So, but you guys did allude to, you know, you guys went to New York Comic Con, so I was curious how that all worked out for you. How did you guys enjoy your trip there?
I don't know about Greg. I had a pretty good time. I think. One of the complaints I had last time was, this was 5 years ago. I think we went in 2011 was the last time we went to New York, was the crowds, and it was just so hard to get around. And that was kind of still true. But I think, expecting it this year, I was able to deal with it a little bit better. And a lot of cool stuff there. One thing I was kind of surprised at is I feel like it's becoming less and less about comics and graphic novels and more and more about merchandise, apparel, and celebrities.
Yeah.
There were so many toys there. There were so many clothing shops and like weird little accessories and just like a lot of useless crap, to be honest. So like I kind of, you know, I walked around and I was able to easily see everything I wanted to see in less than a day, as opposed to like, you know, some of the other ones like Baltimore and stuff we go to, like it takes me a couple days to like look through everything because they have like huge selections of comics and things like that, trades and stuff. So that's one thing I noticed. And I think Greg will agree with me that the cosplayers are great, but it's just really annoying when they stop in the middle of the aisle for everyone to take pictures.
Yeah, they're a little out of hand, and they need to control their community a little bit.
I don't mind pictures, but like, kind of stay off to the side a little bit. I don't know. Yeah. It's really, really tough to get around there, like especially around midday, like noon, 1 o'clock. I mean, it's just so jam packed at that time, and like, you just kind of forget about, you know, seeing anything detailed. It's kind of, you're just roaming around seeing if you know, in general, if there's anything you're interested in. But I don't know, I did some cool things. I think Greg did more cool things than me, so I'll just list off my list of things. But I did get a print from an artist that I really like. His name is Greg Horn. He does like some really, I don't know, it's almost like photorealistic type of art. If you Google Greg Horn art, you'd see some of his stuff. But I remember really liking this one piece of art that he did of Galactus. And when I saw that he was there at his stand, I was like, oh, that's really cool. And, you know, he was selling these prints. They weren't original, obviously, but they're just prints, color prints. They were only $20. They were like 11 by 17. So I was like looking through his binder and he had the Galactus one. So I bought that, and he was actually at the table sort of, you know, doing all the sales. So when I, you know, asked him for that one, he took it out and signed it and everything. And so that was pretty cool to meet him. He seems like a really nice guy.
What books would I know him from? Or
you know, I'm not really sure. I don't know if, I mean, I think he just does like kind of,
he does a lot of covers. Is mainly what you see him through is his cover work.
I don't think he does a whole lot of interior work at all. Okay. I mean, maybe some, but there was a lot of cool stuff. I mean, he had a ton of great prints there, and you know, I wanted them all, but I was kind of limited on budget, so I had to pick my favorite. But another cool thing I did get a, end up getting a free New York Comic Con T-shirt.
Nice.
Because Chevy was there, Chevrolet, and they had this thing where you fill out a survey, you can get a free T-shirt and stuff. So I kind of like when I was going there, I was kind of like, oh, I want to get a New York Comic Con T-shirt, and just looking at them, they're only like $25. And my coworker mentioned that if you do this survey thing, they give you a free one. So we ended up doing it, and I was happy I got my T-shirt. So
did you give them fake information? It's like,
No, I did, because, well, I figured I'm already getting a crap load of emails from Chevy anyway, because I just brought a new truck last year. So I'm like, what's the difference with a couple more emails from them? And then the first one I got, I unsubscribed from it anyway. So. So I was like, yeah, that's how we get a free T-shirt, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. So that was fun. And then my one cool little story, other than I found some graphic novels that I bought and stuff, but I found this this Doomsday. It's kind of a figure slash statue, but it was from the special line a few years ago, the Maddie Collector line. It was called the Signature Series, and this is a Doomsday figure. It's like 10 inches tall. Thing's massive. Doomsday is one of my favorite characters, and I have never actually seen this thing in person, and I saw one of the stands had it there. So I remember asking the guy what he wanted. They wanted $100 for it. While that's still a good deal, I obviously didn't want to pay that. And, you know, the art of haggling, as I've learned from the American Pickers, is, and it's something you have to practice that. So I was like, well, I'm not going to carry it around all day, so I'll go back later in the day, which I did. And I offered the guy 80 for it. He wouldn't take it. He would only go to 90 and this and that. So I kind of, like, you know, stayed firm in what I wanted and kind of walked away. And, you know, it was very polite and everything. Like, nobody was mad, but kind of turned away with my friend Tom, and we were talking. The guy actually, like, follows me over, and this is the cool part of the story. He's telling me, he's like, I'm willing to make a deal with you. And I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. And he's like, I'm actually from Las Vegas. And he's like, you know, I'm a bit of a gambler. So he's like, what do you say we settle this with a coin toss? I was like, okay, I'm listening. And he's like, all right, I flip a quarter. And he said, if I win the toss, you pay the $90. You win the toss, you get it for $70. So he even went lower than what I offered him, you know, just trying to kind of entice me into doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I thought about it for a second. I'm like, all right, let's give it a shot. What the heck? You know, I don't know what made me do it. I just felt like in that mood at that particular moment. So like, let's do it. And so
did you provide the coin? Because, you know, you're thinking, you know, double-sided.
Well, it's funny because that's what Tom was saying. He's like, you better check the coin, make sure it's not like a two-headed coin.
Yeah.
You know? And so he's like, yeah, you can call it in the air. So I called heads, and it hit the floor, and it was heads. So nice. I got this thing for much cheaper than he was actually asking for it, and I was pretty excited about that. And I thought it was a really cool story the way it happened. So thought that would be cool to share on here. But
nice. That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he very devastated when he lost the...
It, in a way, because like, it was funny. I could see when it hit the floor, I could see it was head like immediately.
Yeah.
And he like, it took forever to announce that it was heads because like he didn't want to like accept it. He's like bending over looking closer. He's like, I'm like, dude, I see its head like 5 minutes ago. He's like, oh yeah, it's heads.
Did it land yet? It's like, it's not moving. I think it's still.
Wait, there could be a tremor and it'll flip over. Yeah. It was pretty funny. But nice. I've never had anything like that happen before. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Greg, how was the con for you?
It was really good. I spent the first 2 hours of it waiting in line to try and get a wristband for Toy Tokyo, which they were like, they counted out and they were like, okay, it's going to be capped right here. This is the last person to get a wristband. And it was like 10 in front of me and people were like, oh, and they moved out of the line, whatever. But we were all welcome to stay there or whatever if we wanted to see if this lady's count was off or not. She was like, my count's never off. It's never off. My count's usually dead on. I'm like, okay, well, it could be a little bit off. I'm only about, after some people left, I was like, I'm only like four away from this guy. So it was, I thought it would be worth the wait.
Yeah.
Maybe they miscounted on wristbands. Who knows? Things happen. So mm-hmm. I figured I'd chance it. And yeah, it ended about a good 30 to 50 people away from this guy. She was way off. It was way in front of this guy even. And if I knew that, I would have definitely been out of there. So I kind of wasted the first 2 hours of my con. Yeah. I picked up some pre-commissions that I got before the show started. So a lot of those turned out really awesome. The one I was kind of disappointed in, I asked this one artist. I don't think she's really well known, but she does some stuff on the Bombshell for DC. It's kind of like what happens if these superheroes were around during World War II kind of thing. And it's a lot of the heroines of DC. And so I really like the one Batgirl statue that I have, of where she's kind of like in a more aerial parachute kind of wardrobe, as opposed to Batwoman, who's kind of in a baseball league of her own kind of thing. So I asked for Batgirl. So I go over to her table and I'm like, hi, I have a commission with you. My name's Greg. And she's like, okay, what did you get? I'm like, Bombshell Batgirl. I don't even have anything for a Bombshell Batgirl. I'm like, oh, crap. So yeah, finally she finds out that she misread it, and she already had a Bombshell Supergirl, like, pretty much done. All she needed to do was color in a little bit and add some tonal values for the skin color and everything. She was like, oh, do you want me to redo it? I'm so sorry. This never happens. And especially after some experiences at Baltimore Con, where I still haven't gotten one of my commissions from there, I just wanted her to finish what was there. So I have Bombshell Supergirl, and I'm not, as we all know, I'm not a big Superman, Supergirl kind of category person. So I have this Supergirl drawing now. But otherwise, it was pretty good. I spent most of my time in Artist Alley.
Did she at least give you like a discount for that? For messing?
No.
Really?
Yeah, nothing. Wow. She was just like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry.
Wow.
That's not cool.
Yeah. But what was cool...
I would have knocked like half the price off if that was me.
It's like half the... Yeah, that's a little much, jeez.
But what was cool was Chuck was kind enough to get me some exclusive Funko Pop figures and wait in line because he won the raffle and everything. So he kindly grabbed those for me. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate it. They're,
no problem, my friend.
They're displayed prominently on my dresser. Then I also picked up some other like little kind of like vinyl figure kind of things. And I got a Japanese puzzle box, which my dog's collar is now in. And yeah, that was about it. Besides the one big end of the day thing that Chuck will talk about.
I was wondering if you were going to bring it up.
Nah, I was going to let you do it.
Yeah, so we ended the day on pretty much the highest note you could possibly imagine as far as Comic-Con goes. We ended up getting a photo taken together with Stan Lee himself.
Nice, 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 nice.
Yeah. And this was a... This is like a new thing that New York Comic Con's doing, these photo ops. They actually, you schedule them ahead of time. You pay for them and schedule them ahead of time. And what it does, it just allows you to have up to four people in a picture. So you can kind of like split the cost of it, basically, which was nice because the photo with Stan Lee, whether it was one person or, you know, four people, it was $100. So being that there was four of us, we were able to split it 25 apiece, and like you get a picture of Stanley for $25, which is pretty awesome. It's like once in a lifetime thing. So
and you're there with all your friends and everything, so that's pretty neat too.
Yeah, and the cool part is the picture came out great. Like nobody was blinking or like yawning or anything. Like everybody looked like great. It was like perfect smile. Like I don't know how we pulled it off, but the one thing that kind of disappointed me about the whole thing, though, was like when we ordered the tickets ahead of time, you know, they kind of made it sound like you have this appointment at 7 o'clock, and it said, do not be there any earlier than 6:45. So that's what we did. We got down there exactly at that time. Well, there was already like 100 people in line.
Oh, wow.
Ahead of us. Yeah. And I'm like, how the hell does this happen? Like, I was kind of mad. And so we actually didn't get the picture with him till, what was it, like 7:45 probably?
Yeah, something like that.
And I mean, not that it was a huge, huge deal, but it was just annoying because it was kind of misleading the way they represented it. It was kind of like, you're going to get your picture at 7, you're going to be done. And I thought we would at least get like 30 seconds to like talk to the guy. In reality, it took about 10 seconds. You're in a line. They rush your group in. They place you like you're standing behind them. Then they hurry up. Okay, smile, snap the picture. Okay, you guys got to go. Next group coming in. And it was like Greg said, less than 10 seconds. We were actually there.
It was like a blink of an eye. It was spy quick. I think one kid in line in front of us described it really good. It was like a fever dream. It was just like, did that really happen?
And I don't expect to stand there and talk to the guy for half an hour, but yeah. I at least wanted like a minute just, or a half a minute just to ask him. And they just totally rushed us in and out. They said absolutely no shaking hands, which I kind of get with that many people. But, you know, if they didn't allow so many people to do it, they would be able to give people a better experience. Yeah. But I think they kind of just like, they kind of got greedy with the tickets and, you know, it kind of decreased the quality and the experience and everything like that. But
I think you'd get a fist bump at least. I mean, you know,
that's actually what I said when I walked in. I was like, can we fist bump? And the one guy like shrugged his shoulders. Like, I don't know if Stan knows what that is, so I better not try to.
Yeah.
It'll be awkward.
You think you're going to try to punch him in the face. It's like Ed's fist was coming at me.
Right? Like security tackles me and everything. And like handcuffs and stuff. But nice. I didn't even know if he was real at first because he looked like a wax figure sitting there. Like he's sitting in the chair, not moving. And we're like standing there. I'm like, this could be like a Ripley's, you know, one of those wax figures in the Ripley's Museum. Like, I don't even know if this is the real Stanley.
I definitely proved that he was actual Stanley.
Yeah, you said hi to him, and I think I did right after you.
Yeah. It was kind of funny because I'm like, hey, Stan. And then all of a sudden I hear Chuck, hi, Stan. There's like a little like rush of a thing there that you heard me do. And you're like, okay, I could do this.
Yeah. Well, I felt like I didn't want to be like, I wanted to be cordial. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we're not just there like for your picture. Like, you know, we actually like you, you know? So I kind of wanted to express that a little bit, but. And didn't he chuckle when he said hi back or something?
Yeah, he kind of turned to me and he was like, hello. I had my head up at that time because I was waiting for the pic. I didn't know when the picture was going to go off, so I had my head up the entire time. And I could see out of the bottom of my vision was him kind of turning around looking at me. And he said, I think he said hello back or something. I don't really remember. Like I said, it was a fever dream.
Yeah, it was so fast. It was kind of disappointing.
Oh, well, I guess, you know, you can save in them, so that's at least cool. And you got the photo evidence to prove it. So,
yeah, I actually did a survey when I got home the other day. They like emailed me a survey and I took it and I kind of complained about the photo ops, like,
yeah,
that it was kind of poorly executed. I'm like, I will not be purchasing another photo op. It's a waste of money and time and stuff. So I slammed it pretty hard.
Nice. Yeah, that's like, that is kind of, that does stink. It's like, especially like knowing that he's getting up there and what, probably not that many cons left at him to give people an opportunity
to. This was his last New York con.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Which is probably what they were milking in as much as possible because they wanted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's disappointing. But you guys were at New York Comic Con. I was reading about it, so that was fun. there was a lot of news that dropped, different comics and stuff like that, but one of the biggest things, I don't know, but one thing that did happen was that the trailer for the new Power Rangers movie came out, and we are children of the 90s, so we did grow up watching the Power Rangers, and I'm currently reading the Power Rangers by Boom Studios, which is a pretty good comic, but...
Agreed.
Yeah, I know, Greg, you really didn't get to see it, but Chuck, you did. So I would be interested in, you know, what your overall thoughts were of the Power Rangers trailer.
I thought it looked pretty good. I guess in the beginning, I thought it started off really strong. And actually, like, the kid that's playing Jason, I kind of thought that was Billy at first, just because he kind of looks like the original Billy a little bit.
Yeah.
So my mind just went to that immediately, but I heard them later on call him Jason. But it seems like it even just from the trailer, I get this sense of, like, camaraderie between these kids already. Like, they're going to have kind of a strong chemistry on screen. I hope that proves to be true. But one thing I wasn't expecting was kind of them having the superpowers just in normal everyday life.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They show them, like, breaking the sink. They show them jumping over the canyon and stuff like that. I was like, okay, that's a little weird, but I mean, I guess, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they only had their powers when they, you know, morphed, kind of, like, you know, yeah, obviously they have their martial arts training no matter what, but it's...
I know. I thought that was the purpose of morphin' time, was in order to then morph into being a superhero. So
right, right. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think it has some promise. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I think, what's her name? Oh my gosh, straight in the end of my tongue.
Elizabeth
now.
Banks.
Elizabeth Banks. I am a big fan of hers. I like her a lot. So I'm really curious to see how she does as Rita Repulsa. I think that will be highly entertaining.
And, yeah.
You know, like I said, I it looks like they have pretty good chemistry. I hope that comes through in the final cut. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Going into this, I didn't know what type of tone it was going to be. Like, I remember seeing some of the images of Rita, and she's got this, like, really bright green costume on, and I thought it was going to be a little bit more like Pacific Rim, maybe, or even a little bit more, a little bit comedic, I guess, not comedic, a little cheesy in a way, I don't know. Basically, maybe the tone of something like 21 Jump Street that doesn't take itself too seriously, like, that's what I thought it was going to go, but this is pretty straightforward. It's not, like, it's not cheesy like the TV show of the 90s. It's definitely a more, I think, you know, mature tone without being, like, you know, Batman versus Superman darker or anything like that, but... So that was a little bit, I don't know how I feel about that. I just hope it doesn't try to be, like, too cool. It's nothing like that fan film they made, was it, like, 2 years ago, that was, like, ridiculously dark and everything. And
yeah, that was intense.
Yeah, so nothing like that. But I do think it looks good. The uniforms are, I don't know, I'm getting used to them, I guess. Like, they're like different.
Iron Man outfits.
Yeah, they basically are. And I know a lot of people made the comparison to the movie, the trailer to, like, Chronicle. That reminds them a lot, and I can kind of see that. I am kind of confused because they're not all wearing the same color, so how am I supposed to know which one is which? Like, I thought that was the rule. Like, you know, the black ranger is supposed to wear black all the time. And like, that's... Come on now, that's Power Rangers 101. And we don't get to see the Zords much, so they did kind of, like, alter the lore a little bit, as if, like, Power Ranger lore is gospel, but it's, you know, whatever. So that I'm interested in. I mean, I'm not going to – I guess I don't have huge hopes for it, to be honest, just because it's a Power Rangers movie, but it could be – it could work. Maybe, like, the next thing after Transformers, it'll kind of fill that void, even though we're getting another Transformers movie, but it seems kind of along the same vein as that from what I saw. But
I'm just really glad they didn't bring in Michael Bay to do the Zords.
That's true. Yeah. There's
millions of sharp edges.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I will say, at least at the Comic-Con, the Power Rangers were actually pretty huge.
Really?
I saw a ton of Power Ranger stuff there. I don't know if it's probably, you know, partly because of the movie and everything. But I saw a lot of merchandise, a lot of new toys coming out, you know, some shirts and stuff like that. There was people cosplaying as the original Power Rangers. Actually, those were really good costumes too, that group. I'll have to show you guys the pictures. But yeah, their presence was felt there for sure. There was a lot of Power Ranger stuff.
So. Guess they're making a comeback. I mean, it makes sense. It's like, you know,
don't call it a comeback.
I won't call it a comeback. They've always just, I can't call it a comeback because they've had like 24 shows in a row, so they've never really gone away. They have, so, yeah. Interesting. All right, any other news or anything else you guys wanted to talk about before we take a quick break and come back to talk about Luke Cage?
How about the newest Rogue One trailer? Did you guys see that?
Oh, that was beautiful. Oh, it was
good.
I want that movie to exist now.
Yeah, that does look really, really good.
Yeah, you get a little bit more backstory, a little bit more plot. It's I don't know. It looks I'm excited.
They kind of show the Vader cameo a little bit for a split second.
No voice though. They have to have James Earl Jones, right? If he's gonna be in it,
they have to. That's a must have. The people will be rioting in the streets if that doesn't happen. So.
Yeah.
But is that December that's coming out?
Yeah, so around the same time as the one last year. Okay. Ben Mendelsohn looks like a great Imperial villain. I don't know. It looks like it's got a lot of good going for it. It's, I think, a very different type of style than that of Force Awakens. It looks a little bit more putting the wars in Star Wars. So.
Yeah. Finally, something to look forward to in 2016.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Instead of all the crap this year, it's like the worst year ever.
Yeah, it's at least we'll end on a high note, I guess. You know, with Star Wars. So that I am certainly excited for. Very nice. All right, so what we're gonna do is take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the Power Man himself, Luke Cage. We'll see you in a bit.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Yes, today we're going to be discussing Luke Cage, and since we already got our general thoughts last week, I will say we're just going to go right into it, give spoilers away. So if you have not watched the actual Luke Cage show, I would say stop, go back, finish that, because what else are you doing? Come on now, more priorities, people. And then come back and listen to this. I think it'd just be easier to just get right into it as we go. I know last week we didn't all finish it. We were all at different spots, but now we're all done. So maybe Greg, I can start with you. Just what were your overall thoughts regarding that of Luke Cage?
Really liked it for the most part. There was maybe small little things that I don't even remember offhand, but I thought it was really well done. It wasn't as good as Daredevil. I still think Daredevil is the best of all of them, but it was definitely better than Jessica Jones. I thought the gentleman who played Luke Cage did an awesome job. I was very happy that through most of it, oh crap, what's her name? Rosario Dawson was there as the night nurse. I just love her character at this point. It's so great, easy to fall in love with that character. The villains were pretty interesting, especially Shades and Cottonmouth. I thought they were cool, and so was Diamondback. This was definitely more of a psychology type of thing than just like superpowers like busting heads back and forth. It kind of reminded me of old Incredible Hulks, to be quite honest, but a lot better done and not as corny. And it was like how Incredible Hulk back in the day should have been done, kind of. And the thing that really stuck out, which I found incredible, I wasn't expecting, was I thought the music was really well done through the whole thing. There was a lot of music in there that I really enjoyed, especially the main theme I thought was really cool. So yeah, I thought it was really great. So.
Chuck, what about you?
Yeah, as I mentioned last week, I absolutely loved it. And like I said, I wasn't sure where I was going to stand on it because I loved both Daredevils very much. Really did not care for Jessica Jones at all. And so this one, I wasn't sure. Luckily, this one fell more on the side of Daredevil. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I would put the two Daredevils slightly above it, but I did enjoy it quite a bit. as Greg mentioned, one of the things that stuck out to me the most was the music, and everything just fit so perfectly. It built those dramatic scenes and everything. I feel like Marvel hasn't used music this well since Guardians of the Galaxy, for sure. I think maybe somebody said that before, but it's so true. Like, everything just like reflected the characters that were in that scene, the type of music they were playing and everything. Very, very appropriate all throughout. And for me to like notice the music, it's got to be pretty significant, because usually I'm just kind of like, I don't even notice it. I'm kind of ignoring it and stuff. So that was well done. Another thing, I really liked how Luke Cage was sort of different than in the comics, in the way that they sort of made him like the super nice guy. Like, he was extremely polite, refused to curse, you know, all that stuff. And like, you know, in the comics back in the day, he was not only cursing, but they were coming up with like alternative words to cursing that basically meant the same thing. And, you know, the comics were kind of riddled with that stuff. And, you know, this was totally different. Like, he was the total, like, almost like a Boy Scout type character. Like, didn't like anyone swearing. He kept perpetuating Pop's swear jar and everything, even after he was gone. So he's kind of like, he believed in those ideals, even though they were no longer in the barbershop, didn't apply and stuff. So I thought that was really cool how they did that. One thing, I was really happy with the character of Cottonmouth. I thought that guy did an excellent job. He made like such a perfect villain. Personally, I thought they killed him off way too soon. I really wished he had been able to stick around for a few more episodes, maybe even till the end. I realized what they're trying to do, like bringing Diamond back in and everything. And I know like the whole thing with him being his brother and stuff was supposed to be a better story, but for some reason the Cottonmouth thing was working better for me. Like, that, I don't know, like they had like a real, yeah, like rivalry going there, like where you could see the, like, he, like Luke Cage is really getting under this guy's skin and everything. So I kind of would have liked to seen that played out more, but
he seemed a little bit more of a complicated character in a way. Like, he obviously was an evil dude. Like, he would do, but he was a little bit more subdued, and like he would let it kind of explode. He felt like along the same lines as William Fisk in a way, where he was able to kind of put on that type of personality to make within public, but when he had to, he would explode in bursts of violence and things like that, where Diamondback was just kind of crazy from the get-go.
Yeah.
I think Marshala Ali, who's the guy who played Cottonmouth, I think is a little bit better of an actor,
yeah, too,
so I think that was a big factor, but I agree. He was a huge highlight for me for the show, and I was kind of like, I get like there, that's a powerful moment, and you can the story was able to be built upon that, but after he was gone, I think that his presence was needed for a while, and yeah, until eventually, you know, Diamondback and came, or Rattlesnake. There are a lot of snake names. They love their snake names. So.
They got almost the whole Serpent Society.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I liked about Cottonmouth too was like he was definitely playing the head games. Like, he knew he couldn't match Luke Cage's physical prowess, but he was trying to like turn the whole city against him and stuff like that. And I really liked that aspect of it. And, you know, when you're hitting the streets and you're seeing the people actually still are with Luke Cage, and they, you know, they start telling him that, they start seeing him out there, they start telling him that. And it's really like a cool moment when you're looking at, like, you know, this guy controls everything in the city, and he's like trying as hard as he can to influence the people and sway their opinion of him, and it's just not working because of Luke Cage's actions, like, are speaking louder than the words. Like, they know what he's doing for them and stuff. And that was a really cool plot for me. Like Greg said, it wasn't your typical like smashing back and forth, just trading blows. It was really like about the mind games and stuff like that, and I thought that was really awesome. I also enjoyed too how, like, you know, towards the end, you know, you really start to see Misty Knight kind of losing faith in the system, so to speak,
yeah,
in the legal system and stuff like that. Whether, if, you know, if they do a second season, if she's going to become her superhero character. I'm not sure. They kind of like alluded to that with the arm thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know if she'll lose the arm and she gets like the Stark bionic arm. I don't know if that's gonna happen.
Rocket Raccoon comes and says, "I need that arm," and then
right.
Is it bad that, like, in the first episode, I didn't at all realize that that was Misty Knight until, like, you know, when they basically said it in episode two? I'm like, oh, that makes more sense.
I did the same thing, though. I was like, oh, okay, now I get it, yeah.
Yeah.
I will mention one or two negatives, and I may be alone in this, but for whatever reason, there were two characters in this that I did not care for at all. For whatever reason, I'm not even quite sure why, but I could not stand the character of Shades. I felt like he was just kind of creepy to me, and like he felt like he had sort of like this faux power. Like he kept talking about how he was such a big shot, but like in the end, like he wasn't one of the, you know, crime bosses, so to speak. And it was just weird. It's like, how is this guy coming in, you know, talking to Cottonmouth like this and, you know, trying to persuade his cousin into doing all these things? And he just seemed like sort of a weasel type of character to me for most of the beginning. I mean, he gets a little bit of redemption at the end, you know, in the elevator scene and stuff. But I felt like for most of it, he just kind of was like annoying to me. And I really didn't like, especially the whole Shades thing too. It was like really lame, but because they were like,
I thought that was a joke. And then I realized, oh, that's actually... that's his real name. Because I think the first person that says it is Luke Cage, right? And I'm like, I thought he was, you know, kind of dissing him. Like, oh, sunglasses during the day there. But,
and like, I don't know sunglasses at all. But to me, they looked like $2, like, cereal box sunglasses. Like,
it's just because he had a really small head. So,
yeah. So he was one of them. And then the other one actually was Cottonmouth's cousin. I think it's Mariah was her name. I did not like her. I think there were some scenes where she was very genuine, but there were other scenes where it was like, man, I guess she was trying to be fake, but it just came off a little too strong for me. Like, I don't know. Especially the scene at the end where they're actually interrogating her in the room. It was just so fake, and I'm like, even like, I know they're trying to get that point across, but it's still too fake for me. She's like doing the fake crying and the fake concern. And I was like, I don't know about this character, but
she felt to me like the evil Oprah, which is what I kind of liked about it. Or more evil Oprah. I don't know, however you want to take that. But I did actually like her as a character because I felt like she was her and Cottonmouth. I kind of really liked that relationship, where it goes and stuff like that. So yeah, Shades, I could take him. I didn't expect him to be as big of a character as he becomes by the end.
Yeah.
I thought he would be like, okay, he's there, and then maybe he'll notice Luke Cage, or I was waiting for Luke Cage to kind of like take him out. Like, I felt like but he survived to the end. If you asked me in the beginning of, you know, I would assume, well, Shades dies and Cottonmouth makes it to the end, but it was the opposite. So, but I did get some respect for him as it went on, and it didn't seem like, I don't know, like he had this like better understanding of like everything that was going on. Like there was things he knew that seems like no one else was aware of. He was like ahead of the game. I don't know why that is. If he's a character in the comics, I don't remember him. I don't know. I've read some Luke Cage. I haven't read a lot of the old stuff, but anything else before I give my general thoughts?
Are they just going to make no like connection to the lady that played Mariah Dillard was the same lady from Avengers Age of Ultron that met Tony Stark in that hallway complaining about her son being killed? I guess they're not going to acknowledge that at all.
I guess not. I don't know if like she was like cast in that and they're like, ah, yeah, who knows? They're they're twins. They just don't know it. Yeah.
Right. And I guess, I mean, she had a totally different hairstyle, so maybe it's different enough where they just like, maybe most people won't notice.
I definitely didn't notice.
Well, Carol, my wife, was like, wasn't she in the, you know, Civil War? I'm like, yeah, that I don't think was the same person, though.
Civil War, not Age of Ultron, my bad.
She was talking about Age of Ultron, but...
Yeah.
So, I enjoyed it a great deal. I liked everything Marvel's done Netflix-wise to this point, and I think I enjoyed this a little bit more than Jessica Jones. What I liked about it, it was similar to what... how Daredevil very much used his Catholicism within to kind of richen the themes of that film, that show. Like there was a lot going on here. It's similar. Like Luke Cage, when he was first created, was very much a product of his time. You know, I love the throwback we get here with the yellow shirt and the tiara, you know, back in the 70s. He was so much a 70s character, and he's kind of been reinvented. But I think like now somehow he's come back in the fold and he's been able to kind of reflect the times of today. And you see that throughout. It's from, you know, the use of Harlem's culture to everything politically and socially that's going on. So he ends up being kind of a luck into is the wrong word, but like he's I think being able to become a stronger character, not because of his own traits, but because of things that around him that he's been able to represent. Not that I like him a lot as a character as well, but I think that's helped a great deal. I think the acting around overall was pretty strong. I love the fact that it had like 18 actors from The Wire in it. It's just like every other scene, and it's like, oh, that guy's a character in The Wire. Oh, there's another one. The scientist guy, he was in The Wire. I know he's evil because he was evil in The Wire. I really enjoyed Misty Knight as a character too. I think you could easily even get a show based on that character. I did not expect it to take as much time and develop her and focus on that character as much as they did, but I thought it worked pretty well. And like Greg, when Rosario Dawson came in, she brings a life to it. I love how she's been kind of the Phil Coulson of these universes, being able to pop in here and there, keep them all connected. Beyond that, there's always this really good biblical theme that went to it. I love from like seeing Luke Cage actually choose his name and how he comes up with it to, you know, I am my brother's keeper and their ties to one another. My biggest issue with the season though is kind of like the plot regarding Diamondback, in the sense of it seemed really convenient, the fact that you have Luke Cage, you know, coming on the stage, becoming this character, and Diamondback's there. And he's kind of been in the background, you know, being mentioned since in the beginning. And then he's just, you know, well-known crime person within, you know, the system. And then he's also Luke Cage's brother. Like, it just seemed like, I felt like the way they handled that was a little bit messy. It's like,
yeah,
they could have, in a way, maybe not even mentioned him or somehow make it seem a little less forced, because it's like, you know, Luke Cage up to this point is not a known force, and, you know, they're bringing Diamond back in, and up to that point, they're bringing him in, not because of his relationship to Luke Cage, but because of everything else. So it did seem a little bit like that kind of came out of nowhere and logically doesn't kind of fit all that much. I liked where it goes and where it ends up, but I almost wonder if it would make somewhat of sense if they kind of flipped the script where they start with Diamondback and they get into Cottonmouth, who seemed more like, who to me seemed like a stronger villain. I do like the style of very blaxploitation, like light, not so much. If you go back and watch a lot of black exploitation films, you have that here. Very heavy themes that are very apparent, very overt, and I think that was very similar. But it was really good. Kind of methodically paced. Like, I think the action wasn't up to the same level as Daredevil. When it was there, I enjoyed it. But I also thought it finished the strongest. Maybe not. Maybe that's hyperbolic, but I thought it stayed really current. Like, I thought it was kind of slowing down. Then episode 12 hit, and I think that was probably my favorite episode. Specifically the moment that he breaks up the robbery in the convenience store, and he just smacks the guys in the face. Like he would, like, a bug. I don't know if you remember that moment
at all. I just liked the fact that randomly Method Man was there.
Method Man, he's ever-present. He's everywhere. But just, like,
You wear a double XL? Yeah, man.
I just thought it was funny because it makes sense. You have this dude who's like super strong. So if you have this normal human being, he doesn't really have to hit him that hard. So you can just, like, you know, like backhand them lightly, and it's like getting punched in the face. And I thought it was just really, I don't know. I found it very funny. And so I really liked that scene.
I liked what they did with Diamondback's costume, where they sort of, you know, he had the zipper down and it sort of made it look like the belly of a snake.
Yeah, with the yellow coming out. And it was like kind of a ribbed thing.
Yeah. Thought that was pretty cool.
I did too.
What I didn't
ugly
like.
Ugly as hell.
Yeah.
It looked cool.
The color, that green color. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the green with the yellow. It was a puke green and then the weird ass helmet.
Yeah. But what I didn't like was that whole fight. Like, he was like kicking the shit out of Luke Cage. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, what the hell? And like, I guess like the more I thought about it, it wasn't so much, I don't think it wasn't so much as he was stronger than Luke Cage and everything. I think Luke was kind of holding back because it was his brother. He was still trying to reach him on some level. So I kind of took it more that way. And he finally realized that he couldn't. So he just had to finish it. And then, obviously he's thinking during that whole thing about the boxing match where he said to tire him out. But I just thought they made it look like he struggled a little bit too much. Because I'm like, he should still be mopping the floor with this guy because he's had these powers for much longer than Diamondback has been using this power suit. Yeah. So he have better control over them. He should be able to, just destroy this guy. But
yeah, I could see that. But I guess they had to try to build, tension in some matter of fact way. And I you mentioned, think partially was that being resistant to trying to basically, kill his brother. Because like I mentioned with the one thing, it seems like he did, for the most part, hold back his powers as much as possible. And I think maybe he thought if he, part of it, like what I saw too, was like if he felt like if he went forward and he thought he would have to kill him. And, I think that was something he tried to avoid throughout the show, was going down that aspect of killing. Like, there's that really great moment during the funeral for Pop where he sits down with the one lady who's about to basically shoot Cottonmouth for basically, for taking her father's ring and things like that. So, but he kind of just sits down, talks to her, walks away, and she pulls out the gun and it's basically been bent into, so she can't use it. So I did like how he had, as a character, Luke Cage, to kind of figure out who he was and what he represented. Like, there was a lot of challenges he faced, and from his being reluctant to do anything to where he began. So I don't, did you guys have any specific episodes or moments or anything like that you felt stood out to you or were they you're talking about?
I guess one of the best nerdy moments was when he had the classic costume on.
Yeah.
When he pulled the yellow shirt off the clothesline and he still had the metal tiara on and stuff.
I agree. I loved that.
And he even had the chain. He grabbed the chain off the thing. I was like, that's awesome. But then he poked fun at it because he was saying like how awful he looked and stuff. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah. What did you guys think of that episode as a whole? Like the whole like prison episode with the flashback and how they kind of, they did the Netflix thing where they don't really get into the origin right away. It takes them some time to kind of explain what exactly happened to them.
I thought it was good, but one part that didn't make sense to me was like they did that whole sequence while him and his landlord were trapped in the rubble from the building collapsing. And usually you do that type of sequence when the person is like knocked unconscious or something. And it's, it just makes sense that way. That's the way they usually do it. Like he's unconscious and he's like thinking back over his past or something. So they play it out that way, but he was awake through that whole thing. Like he was trying to get out of the rubble with his landlord and stuff. So like it kind of worked, but it kind of was a little forced, but I don't know. I liked it overall. I thought it was cool.
What did you think of the action overall? Cause I know.
Yeah, it was a little sparse, but I don't think they had a huge budget for it. So maybe I'm assuming this is done well. So maybe next year they'll have a little bit beefier budget, and maybe they could do a little bit more action stuff instead of him just getting shot and people going down. maybe we'll get more powers in there. So I'm hoping it leads to next season getting more action, because it was a little bit spare, but what was there was good.
I mean, we did get, of course, it's like the rule when it comes to Marvel movies, we did have a hallway fight, a little bit different with the car door.
Yeah. One thing I thought was cool too was the little bit of explanation of his powers that we got, kind of when he went to Georgia to see that doctor, and they were talking about like, and this is something that I had not really realized or thought about, but it's not just the surface of his skin that is like hardened like steel. It's actually all the way through his flesh.
Yeah.
That's hard. And I thought that was really interesting because that's not something that I thought about before. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Cause like, even though he has like a wound, like an opening, still the flesh underneath it is still just as strong as the exterior. Yeah. So I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, it makes sense too, because it makes sense as much as it could make sense. But you know, if like you're gonna fall off a building and you have bulletproof skin, if your
organs insides
were,
would be mashed potatoes.
exactly. So I did like that. I mean, like, I agree the action was a little bit sparse, but I think it did it when it made sense. At the final, you know, showdown was okay. I don't remember, like, in the comic books, him having a military background, but in this, he did. He seemed to be more of a strategic fighter, you know, more, you know, in the comic, he was really just, you know, a street fighter that used brute force. I just wish they kind of maybe displayed that a little bit more. I guess maybe he didn't really need to for the most part, because he's just super strong going against people shooting at him. But every time you saw, like, his shirt basically be riddled with bullets and stuff, like, that image, I thought it was always really cool. It was just really funny to watch, so.
Yeah.
And his, like, nonchalant attitude in fights where he was, I don't know. Like, he wasn't, like, you didn't really get the anger you would get with, like, a Wolverine. He just seemed to kind of just go through the motions, which was different.
Yeah, it was kind of like he was annoyed at times. It's like, I don't have time to deal with this right now. Like, I have to buy a new shirt now.
Yeah.
What do you guys think will happen in the future? Because, like, the way they ended it, that doctor sort of salvages the hard drive of the laptop. It still has the information on it. Obviously, Diamondback is still alive, even though he's badly injured. I mean, do you think they're going to go that direction, where they sort of try to give him those powers? Or
I could see that. I could see that being a possibility. I wish I knew more of Luke Cage's villains, but I really don't know any of them. I'm guessing maybe for, like, the future of it, the way, like, you know, you get the Misty Knight, we're having Iron Fist and coming, that maybe, like, it moves into the Heroes for Hire. I was not expecting at the end with Luke Cage going to jail. So how they deal with that fallout. I'm curious, like, does he meet someone in jail? Maybe he meets the Punisher. That would be pretty awesome, you know. So that I was kind of excited for that, but that's maybe my guess, is that somehow it kind of goes into the Heroes for Hire, and maybe, you know, Diamondback comes back as a more powerful character in some way.
Yeah.
And Chuck or Greg, if you have any thoughts.
I just want to see more superpowered people kind of come in, so come up more to his level physically. I still like the little mind games back and forth and it being a matter of intelligence, but I would also like to see something a little bit more threatening to him on a physical level as well. So there's something there to maybe challenge him a little bit more.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. One thing that kind of annoyed me going back to the Jessica Jones season was how they did the 12-gauge shotgun blast up under the chin was enough to knock him unconscious. And I was like, I don't know about that. Like, that doesn't seem to be consistent with the other things that you're doing here. But I don't know. So I thought that was interesting.
I guess it would depend upon the amount of force, maybe. That's the tough thing when you have a guy like that. Like, how do you build it in? That was kind of one thing I was wondering. Like, he's fighting basically all normal powered people for the most part till the end, obviously, and I think that's maybe why the action was sparse, because there's only so many times you could watch a guy beat up people that are, you know, that are just shooting him with a gun. So I think they kind of used it when they could. So maybe if they do bring in more superpowered people, they do have additional, like, you know, villains and or additional heroes alongside him, it could kind of make that action a little bit more variety, where you have something like Daredevil, which is just two people fighting and martial arts, so you don't really need as much as a budget. You don't need as much as choreography is amazing, but I think it's maybe a little bit more easier to do compared to, like, getting a fight where people are going to go through buildings and things like that.
Yeah. I'm excited for the Defenders now, because I remember that little teaser we got where you kind of hear Stick's voice.
Yeah.
Saying, like, you four think you're gonna, you know, protect the world or something. And so now I'm, like, really interested to see how they're all gonna interact with each other. That's gonna be pretty cool.
Were you guys at all disappointed by the fact that outside of Rosario Dawson, we didn't really get any other Netflix character? Like, there were some mentions, but Daredevil didn't show up, Jessica Jones wasn't there. It was just pretty much the Luke Cage show.
I think I actually kind of expected that. I didn't think any of those would show up except for Night Nurse. So I didn't really have an issue with that.
I thought Jessica Jones might, but I don't know. Greg, were you at all disappointed by the fact that we didn't get any more, you know, Marvel cameos per se? No Punisher.
No, because I thought I was very happy that Rosario was there. And I don't know, I thought there was enough going on that I really didn't need an entrance of another character.
Yeah.
I thought the mentions that they did do were quite well done, because mentioning I know a good lawyer and everything was kind of fun. But no, I wasn't expecting like anything big cameos or anything like that.
Yeah, I get that too, because it's, you know, you kind of want to save that for Defenders, I guess, make it more special when they finally get together. I remember, Chuck, you mentioned last week that you had some Easter eggs. I don't know if you wanted to talk about those at all. Or
yeah, I'll just talk about a couple, because there's literally dozens and dozens of Easter eggs that you can find. You can, you know, Google the whole list, but a couple of the cool ones I wanted to mention was, obviously, you had the Stan Lee cameo when he's on the little poster on the side of the building.
Yeah. See, I thought, like, I was so happy, proud of myself that I saw that. I'm like, no one else saw that. And then I went online. Everyone else saw that. So.
Yeah, it was funny because they kind of, like, left the camera on it for, like, a couple extra seconds. And I'm like, yeah, that was pretty blatant. But I'm like, I wonder if anybody else caught that. Like, I thought the same thing. So that was cool. And then, obviously, I mentioned the throwback to the original costume was cool. The Seagate Prison that was brought up in the, was it the extra scene from Iron Man 3 with the Mandarin? Like, remember that little extended movie thing or whatever they call them? That took place at Seagate Prison, so that was pretty cool tie in there.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I don't think anybody was in that scene per se. Like, I don't think Shades was hanging around in the background. Maybe he was, I don't know. But and this one's really obscure, and I did not catch this one at all, but this is one of the ones I think is the coolest. Apparently, like, in a couple of the scenes they show them at Mount Olivet Church, which is a big Harlem landmark. But apparently in the comics, which I have not apparently been following close enough, but that is a frequent hideout of Spider-Woman, really? Because she hangs out at the cemetery and refers to it as her quiet place. So that was a cool little Easter egg there. I doubt they're going to introduce her as a character, but I think it was just kind of a little shout out thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool, because she is like friends, like best friends with Jessica Jones. So
yeah, and then you have the Hellcat character, which I'm not sure if they're going to pursue that, but you know, yeah. She was in Jessica Jones, so that was kind of cool.
They also had her doing a little voiceover thing during Luke Cage.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there was a little bit of crossover there, and then we mentioned the thing with Misty's right arm, you know, if that ends up getting amputated or something. In the comics, she has a sort of a bionic arm like the Winter Soldier. I think that was made by Tony Stark though, right?
I don't know, honestly. I'll say yes, but I really don't know.
So yeah, there was those were the kind of the high points, I guess. There's a ton of other ones if you want to Google them. Like, I think I saw there was somebody had a list of like 40 or 50 of them or something like that, like all little tiny obscure ones and stuff. So
overall, I think it's rather successful. I'm liking what they're doing here and super excited for Iron Fist. Have you guys seen the brief? They've had like a, you know, they had the really small introduction trailer at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But then they introduced like the actual, like, you know, 2-minute trailer. Are you guys excited for that at all? I know I don't think you guys have read much Iron Fist from what I remember.
Well, I haven't read much Iron Fist or Luke Cage, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not much Luke Cage to read, honestly, outside of New Avengers. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for that. I was kind of like, I feel like they were really hinting at that stuff at the end of Daredevil.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if they pick up there or if they will tie into it later or how exactly they're going to do that. But, and then obviously his relationship with Luke Cage is, you know, in the comics, they worked together and stuff, became friends. So, and then if you remember for a while, was it during Civil War or after Civil War when, Danny Rand actually was Daredevil for a while?
It was before and during.
Before and during, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. I don't know if they would tackle anything like that in the show, but that's
I forgot all about that. And then there was where, you know, you had Daredevil go to jail and Punisher show up, so
yeah.
I think we're gonna see, and then we have Punisher coming next year too, so I enjoy the Marvel movies, but I think my enjoyment of the TV shows has been richer, I think, especially with Daredevil and Luke Cage. So
And especially because I think I'm going to be confused as hell watching Doctor Strange. That movie just looks like so confusing. I don't know. Maybe it won't be, but
I'm excited for it. I'm not going to lie. It does look weird, but
yeah. I don't know.
All right. Anything else before we bring this episode to a close? All right. Well, overall, we all enjoyed Luke Cage, so go out and watch it. Most of you probably have, of course. But I'd like to hear your thoughts, what you thought of Luke Cage. You can let us know by going to geekcastradio.com, commenting on the episode post, or emailing us at feedback@geekcastradio.com, or talkingcircles@live.com. You guys are also, we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You guys are also on Twitter. What is your Twitter name?
I am @HerwickAgeChuck.
And I am @TheCrateForge.
And I am @MovieRevolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg. Or Raisin.
Aw. R.I.P. R.I.P. And this has been Dan. And we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next week. I will start jingling my keys just in, as I remember during my editing. So she'll have a presence in the podcast.
Did you like that Luke Cage Family Matters mashup?
Oh, yeah. I should have brought that up. That was amazing. That was a good time.
I'm sorry. I didn't have a chance to watch it.
Oh, it's freaking hilarious.
It works so well. It's scary. It works so well.
Yeah. It really is scary. It's unbelievable.
It, you know, just, I don't know if the guy who edited it, like, lightened the video at all or anything like that, like, the look of it, but it looked like, you know, it just looked like the opening from the, you know, I don't know, it encompassing everything from that show was amazing.
All the happy moments where they're smiling. Yeah. I didn't think there were that many.
I know.
Like, shots of people laughing and smiling. It was like,
how about got all of them. You got all of them.
Yeah. I like how instead of Urkel, they had Turkle.
Yeah, that was nice.